Starry, starry night. Paint your palette blue and gray.
Who likes to stargaze? We will talk with an expert this hour about what we can expect in our starry, starry nights this year. And we'll discuss some other space-related news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us on this Wednesday, January 2nd. If you are listening to the evening repeat of this show, and if the skies are clear, but unfortunately the weather forecast says they're going to be cloudy, there is going to be a show going on outside tonight and tomorrow night, a meteor show. And throughout the year, there are lots of other happenings, including a spectacular comet that is expected later in 2013. We hope you'll call in with your questions, with your astronomy-related discoveries, your space-related views at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Bob Bonadur. He is director of the Daniel M. Soriff Planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum. Thanks very much for joining us, and Happy New Year.
You're welcome, Joy. Happy New Year to you, too.
So what about this comet, or not comet, it's the meteor show tonight. What's going on?
The Quadrantids come along every time this year, just like the other meteor showers we have. And it's expected to be fairly good this year, possibly up to 80 meteors per hour. But there's going to be a moon up there, or near a waning gibbous moon. So moonlight, like city lights, will block a lot of them out. So if anyone wants to brave the cold weather, and it is clear, we always suggest to get away from the city lights as much as possible.
Yeah. So is this an annual show that goes on?
Yeah, annual show. Yeah, the Quadrantids, that's not a constellation. It's a kind of a collection of four constellations, but it's up near the Big Dipper area of the sky. That's where people should look. But always with meteor showers, you just kind of sit back and watch the whole sky. Get a lawn chair, even though it's winter, and lie in that and just look straight up.
Yeah, now the meteor showers that we saw in December, the Perseids, is that how they're pronounced?
In December, it's the Geminids.
Oh, the Geminids, okay.
Which is a good one, but the Perseids come in August every year, August 11th and 12th, and that typically is the best meteor shower of the year.
And it was pretty spectacular this past year, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. You're always guaranteed of a good show if you get up early and you get away from the city lights. Mm-hmm. And the moon is not too bad.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that. The Starry Messenger newsletter that your planetarium puts out talked about how our starry, starry nights are less and less each bright, I guess. Is it light pollution?
Yeah, unfortunately, our city lights, which of course we need and for safety and security reasons, however, there's just so many of them that we've lost our night sky a lot. And unfortunately, some children are growing up these days without ever seeing that beautiful glow of the Milky Way. And we show it here at the planetarium, and we'll ask our audience, when's the last time you saw the Milky Way in the real sky? And once in a while you hear, I've never seen it. And that's just sad in a sense. And so we encourage people as much as they can to get away from the city lights and really check out this amazing universe in which we live.
Yeah. So what, you just have to drive out into the countryside and all will be well?
Well, hopefully. Yeah. depends where you live. Of course, here in Milwaukee, we have to drive a little further. But even in small towns, it's hard to see the Milky Way. So you just need to drive out a little bit and check it out.
Yeah. Do you advocate for any kind of anti-light pollution legislation?
Oh, sure. I haven't done it besides our newsletters, which in expressing that need to our audiences. It's important. It really is. It's a win-win situation with lighting companies and governments, because if you use more efficient lighting and you aim the light down, there's all kinds of technical ways you can do it less expensively. It's Arizona is known for this. They have some of the best light pollution laws, but it's part of the economy there because they have so many big telescopes that they use for research. So it's very important important to them that Phoenix, Tucson, those big cities, all their light is aimed down and you have the best lighting efficiency as possible.
Yeah, you're right. I remember I loved stargazing as a kid, and the stars did seem so much brighter back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it is right in the city of Madison. It's hard to pick up a lot of stuff as well. But why do you think it is so many of us love stargazing?
Oh, it's just the connection. I think we're born with it. I mean, we long to know what's out there ever since. People saw, those myriad of stars against the black background. I think it's a connection, and we found out not too long ago that we came from the stars. We are literally star stuff. The stuff in our bodies was once forged in the furnaces of stars, and that is just an amazing discovery. And we just long to know what's up there and what's going on. Of course, one of the biggest speculations now is there anyone out there? The whole question about extraterrestrial life still. Still is a romantic notion sometimes, but it still fuels our research and our explorations.
I think it was Neil deGrasse Tyson who said something along the lines of, we are the universe. The universe is in us.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we wanted to talk with you today as we start 2013, in part because we saw a news story that said that this is what some experts are calling the year of the comet. Tell us what why it's so going to be a spectacular year for comets.
Well, we hope. It's going to be a spectacular year. These comets are very unpredictable. They're like cats. They have tails, and we're not sure what they're going to do. But if things go well, we should have a bright comet in early March, early to mid-March, and we should have another one toward the end of the year in late November and early December. So we're tracking these comets. We'll know more as they get closer to the sun, but they're still unpredictable. The first one could be as bright as the bright stars in the night sky, like Vega and Arcturus. And the last one, Comet Ison, could be as bright as the moon, which would be the brightest comet like ever that anyone has seen on planet Earth right now. So we hope they come true. We'll be talking a lot about them all year, so we shall see.
Well, why is it that they're so unpredictable?
Well, because their comets are made of rock and ice. And they're fairly small, typically a mile across, maybe 10 or 20 mile across. But as they get close, they can lose their ices. We are not sure exactly what they're made of, and the ices are very reflective. So if the ices burn off quickly, that means they could be dark. If the comet could literally it could break in two, and that also could make its brightness dim. So these combinations, we just don't know. And that's sometimes they're predicted to be very bright, and sometimes they don't achieve that. And that could happen this year.
Well, for instance, this comet Ison, mm-hmm. the one that's coming later, that's the more spectacular one.
Correct, right.
And that one, how does this work? I mean, is it something that's going to be traveling across the sky, if all things work out, for days? Or is it a flash? Or what happens?
Typically, they last a fairly short time. It can be a couple of weeks, maybe a month. But they don't flash across the sky. The biggest misconception is that comets are like meteors, that they kind of shoot across the sky. They do move across the sky, but you don't see them shoot at all. They're kind of like a planet. If you think of Venus and Mercury, they'll move their position a little bit each night. That's what comets do.
Uh-huh. And where are these comets now?
Oh, they're out in the solar system. I think Ison's out by Jupiter somewhere. So, and I'm not sure where Pan-STARRS is, the one in March. Not sure exactly, but they're fairly far away right now.
And where did they come from?
Well, they come from what they call the Oort cloud, discovered by which is a cloud of trillions and trillions of comets way out beyond Pluto. And they're just kind of leftovers from when the solar system formed, and they just never collapsed into a planet. They never collapsed in the sun. They were kind of spun out into this. It's kind of like an asteroid belt, if you think of it, but it's a comet belt, and we call it the Oort cloud, named after the discoverer.
Mm-hmm. And these comets, there's no chance either of these comets would hit Earth.
No, there's not. Not these two, but there is always the possibility that a comet could be headed for us, and that's why it's very important that we study these and pay attention to them.
Yeah. What's the best way for us to view comets?
View comets is going back to the meteor, same thing. Get away from the city lights. That's going to be very, very important. Even, especially for pan stars, it depends how bright Eisen gets, but it's always important. Remember, if you see it against a blacker background, it's just going to be more spectacular. So we always suggest, if you can, get away from the lights.
Yeah. So what are you looking forward to seeing in the sky in 2013?
Well, I'm hoping these comets pan out. I really do. You typically get a bright comet every 10, 20 years, and we haven't really had a bright one, at least in this hemisphere, since Comet Hale-Bopp back in 1997. So I'm hoping this comet, these comets get bright and get people, you know, curious about the sky again and really grab their attention. Beyond that, there's this year in the sky, unfortunately, we have no eclipses this year. 2014, we're going to have three, so 2014 might be the year of the eclipses.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always the planets up there wandering around. They get together once in a while. In late May, we're going to have Jupiter and Mercury getting together, along with Mars in the sky. So when these planets get together, that's always fun.
Yeah, there was. Back to the comets. Were you talking about Halley's Comet back in the 80s?
No, Hale-Bopp was the name. That was 97. Halley's Comet came by in 86.
That's what it was. Okay.
Yeah, and unfortunately, just the way the orbits worked out with Halley's and Earth orbit, it turned out to be the most possible distance from the Earth this time around. So unfortunately, and some viewers, listeners out there will remember that Halley's Comet was not very good, not very bright that year.
Yeah. Are there any other space-related events or news events that are going to be important in 2013?
Well, we're always going back into space. We're going back to Mars again with an orbiter. We're going to launch another robot up there in November called MAVEN, so that will be nice. And then, you know, people always think it's just NASA sometimes, United States, but India, the country India, is going to launch a spacecraft to Mars this year, which is interesting. So other countries are developing their space programs, and hopefully someday we'll go to Mars, maybe on an international mission with humans going to Mars, which would be a great accomplishment.
Would you like to do that?
I'd love to do that. I think I'm past the astronaut age, but it would be just a wild trip. You have to be well prepared for these trips, and that's what our program with the space station right now helps do is to keep our astronauts and see what the effects being in space is. Because, excuse me, going to Mars would be a 2 to 3, maybe 4-year trip for any astronaut.
Yeah, did you... I saw that the Mars rover took a self-portrait recently. Any news other than that from the Mars rover?
Oh, no. It's Curiosity is still going. We still show the cool video in our planetarium shows of how it landed back in August.
Yeah, that was neat.
That is just amazing engineering feat. But it's just taking great pictures. It's roaming around. It's analyzing the rocks with spectrometer. It's got this laser that actually digs into the rocks, which is really cool. And it's once again establishing that the conditions for life on Mars, possible life, are still holding true. So we don't have the answer to that question, but what Curiosity has been finding is that scientific evidence is holding true, that the conditions look like there was a lot of water on Mars and that life could have started.
Do we expect any big news from Curiosity in 2013?
Probably not, because, you know, if folks may remember back in 96, they found that Martian meteorite,
mm-hmm.
and they thought, oh, my goodness, some scientists issued a paper said that this could be life. They didn't say it was, but it could be, and it really created some sensational headlines across the globe. But if you're going to try to make that claim, you really need some great evidence, and I don't think Curiosity is set up for that.
We are talking with Bob Bonneder. He is director of the Planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum. And we're talking about all things space, neat things in the night sky, the starry skies outlook for 2013. Some astronomers are calling 2013 the year of the comet because of two bright comets that will be present, we hope, this year, one in March and one in December. And we're talking about some other things that are happening with planets and the night sky. And we welcome your questions for Bob. We welcome your experiences as a stargazer. What are you looking forward to? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll join us tomorrow at this time. We'll follow up on another New Year's resolution program with a cardiologist tomorrow. We'll talk about how you can have a healthy heart in 2013, talking about prevention and treatment of heart disease tomorrow between 8 and 9. Right now we are talking about the outlook for our night sky in 2013, talking about some of the neat things that will be happening in our night sky with Bob Bonneter, who is director of the planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum. We're welcoming your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Are you a stargazer and why? Let us know. And let us know maybe some neat discoveries that you've made or maybe some things you're looking forward to. And I was going to ask you, Bob, what are some of the highlights? What are some of the things you'll be doing at the planetarium this year?
Well, we're involved in a lot of projects here at the planetarium. Always producing shows for the planetarium. We're working with the University of Wisconsin-Madison on the Ice Cube Telescope. Some people may have heard it's down at the South Pole. It's buried beneath the ice, and we're working together with them to produce a planetarium show, which will be great. It's the world's biggest telescope, the coolest telescope, we like to call it, because it's at the South Pole, and that's one project we're working
Very
on.
Funny. What exactly is the Ice Cube Telescope?
Well, it's a set of over 5,000 detectors buried beneath the ice at the pole, and what they do is look for neutrinos, and neutrinos are very high energy. They're almost as small as something can be in the universe and still be something. But what's amazing is that when we detect them, they tell us about some of the biggest things in the universe, some of the most energetic things in the universe, and these are supernovas, black holes, and maybe things that have so much energy we don't even know what they are yet. So that's what Ice Cube does. It's trying to unlock some of those mysteries of the universe.
Yeah. Well, what about highlights at the planetarium in terms of shows? Or can people come and enjoy comets and constellations and such at your planetarium?
Yes. Every one of our planetarium shows, we just show the night sky for 20 minutes. And a lot of times we ask the audience if they have anything they want to see or any questions they have. So we just stargaze, like we've been talking about. And then the second half of the show, we have different programs. We have a new one coming up called The Wildest Weather in the Solar System. And the tagline, of course, is you'll be glad you live on Earth, because the weather out there is just amazing. I mean, you have wind speeds over 1,000 miles per hour on Neptune and, crazy cold temperatures, and you got dust devils on Mars, and it's just, you got ice geysers on Triton, the moon of Neptune, so it's an amazing place. And then we have our Valentine show, Romancing the Stars, which is great for couples. No children allowed at this one.
And what's so romantic about them?
If you think about all the songs that have been celebrated about the night sky. So we play some, like Fly Me to the Moon by Frank Sinatra.
Very good. One of my favorites.
Yeah. So it's just a lighthearted, fun, romantic look at the night sky. And I mean, we just don't play songs. It's just a nice night. So if you've got a date, come visit. And we've been doing this show since we opened, and it attracts everyone from young couples to older couples, and it's just a great show.
More information is on your website, which we have linked to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. TJ in Wisconsin Dells joins us. Hi, TJ.
Good morning, and Happy New Year to
Happy
everyone.
New Year.
One thing that my wife and I try to catch whenever we can, and unfortunately we're not 400 or 500 miles farther north, is the auroras. And we try to follow spaceweather.com or whatever to see when there's any big flares or when there's news of any flares. Another thing that we enjoy is when we do get up north into Vilas County, just going out and laying out on the pier and just counting the satellites as they come over, with the stars as your backdrop, and catching the space station and going to, the internet sites where it tells the flyby times and we found that young people thoroughly enjoy it, and, you know, some of them, it seems it's hard for them to grasp that. Now, that one that you know, we just saw for 3 or 4 minutes, there's actually people inside that one, and it's just, we also like to look at some of the history where, you know, not just foreign cultures, but people in this country, you know, what they thought they were seeing and comparative to what we know now and comparative to what we don't know and just, you know, now people used to think that this was happening when it was actually that. And it's just amazing. I mean, there's so much, the more we dig, actually, or the more we look up, the less we know. You know, there's just one thing leads to five that we go and do research on. And it's just really fulfilling. And it's a good way, you know, to, I mean, on the nights when it's unfortunately cloudy or when we're stuck down in the city or something, and we've got dead time and we haven't got our face buried in a book or a novel, we go online and do a little research and look for something to find the next time that it's clear. So,
well, you make it sound so great, TJ. I'm so glad you called. I mean, and you wouldn't disagree with any of that, Bob.
Oh, no. He hit a lot of great points, TJ did. The aurora, wonderful. That happens after solar storms, and that's something that is happening right now. The sun peaks every 11 years, and scientists don't directly know why, and that's happening this year and next. So we have a better chance for the northern lights or the aurora this year. And satellites, yeah, we can hardly get through a day in our lives without using a satellite of some kind. And the way cultures look at the sky, yeah, we show Chinese constellations sometimes and the Mayan constellations, and so it's very important to do everything he said.
TJ, thank you so much. Talk a little bit about the Northern Lights, if you can, Bob. In terms
sure.
of, seems to me there was one day last year where the Northern Lights were seen so much more south in the hemisphere, I guess, than they normally are seen. People were just amazed.
Correct.
I mean, that happens every once in a while. We'll see them, you know, as far south as I don't know, as like the southern mid United States. We were seeing them.
Yes, they were seeing them, I think, in Texas, Arkansas.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if the storm is more energetic on the sun, these charged particles from the sun, they'll light up the atmosphere even deeper, and people will see it further south. So, yeah, that's very rare, though. And in here in the Milwaukee area, it's less rare than northern Wisconsin. For listeners up there, they get to see it a little bit more. And, of course, Canadians and people, Alaska, will see it a lot more.
Is there any way to know if those of us who are a little farther south of Vilas County are going to be able to see a Northern Lights show?
There is, Joy. There is. I think TJ mentioned it. There's a website called spaceweather.com, and we have it on our star maps. So if they link to our star maps, they can get to it. But it's a website that tracks the sun and other things, and you can actually sign up for email alerts on that website.
Oh, cool.
So,
and why do we see those beautiful colors when the Northern Lights are going on?
It's electricity, basically. What happens, these charged particles from the sun, they get deflected by the magnetic field of the Earth, but they spiral in at the poles. So that's why if you're near the North or South Pole, you have a better chance to see it. And so when these particles from the sun spiral in through the atmosphere along the magnetic field lines, they slam into the molecules of our atmosphere, basically oxygen and nitrogen, as we know. And when these particles hit the atoms, they tear electrons off. And then when the electron falls back onto the atomic nucleus, it produces light. And the oxygen glows green. Sometimes it can glow red. And the nitrogen usually glows kind of a bluish, purplish color.
And as you say, that we should have more than normal activity when it comes to Northern Light shows this year?
Right. And that's why we saw it mm-hmm. last year, right. This 11-year peak that the sun does isn't like a single day. It usually lasts a good year or two. So,
we are talking with Bob Bonneder. He is director of the planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum, talking about some of the things we will see in our night skies in 2013, our starry skies outlook. And we are welcoming your questions about what we can see in the sky and other, you know, planet or space-related questions that you have, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Marion Schulzberg emails, "One night I looked into the night sky, and I saw a huge circle around the moon, almost like a halo. Do you know what that was and what caused that?"
Very good, Mary. It was a halo. That's what they're called. It's caused by ice crystals in the atmosphere. And what happens is the moonlight just reflects off these ice crystals and makes the halo. And usually, not always, usually it's a sign that we'll have precipitation the next day, either snow or rain. So that's what's causing it.
All right. Siobhan in Delavan is with us now. Hello, Siobhan.
Good morning. I'm really enjoying this show. I'm relatively new to stargazing. However, I have a longstanding tradition of going up to Door County every August, which is up north, north of Green Bay, to see the Perseid meteor shower. And this year it was phenomenal. It was one of the best viewings I've seen. There was no moon and no clouds at all in the sky. So it was just phenomenal. And I just wanted to know if we have any other meteor showers coming up. And I had a question about the northern lights. I had read somewhere that the next few months are going to be exceptionally good for viewing the northern lights. And if there's any truth to that.
There could be. As we were talking about, the sun is more active. This is going to be more active this year, but we can't exactly predict, you know, if there's going to be a solar storm tonight or tomorrow. So that website, spaceweather.com, is important to follow. That will clue you in when there will be a solar storm, and or when there was one, and when there will be a good chance for the northern lights.
And are there going to be, we talked about the meteor showers that are taking place tonight and tomorrow, but
right.
Other big ones throughout the year?
Well, the Perseids, as I mentioned, is very good, and the Geminids in December, and there's some other ones, the Lyrids, and I think are in April, and there's some other ones. You can just Google it, but typically those two are the best by far.
Yeah. And I think Siobhan's got a great idea to go to Door County to see this. That would
it's a wonderful place up there. Yeah, I've been up there many times, and it's gorgeous. You have lots of smaller towns, less city lights, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, it sure is. A listener emails, "Will there be any close encounters this year?" I'm not sure if I know exactly what that means, but maybe just a planet or something getting really close to us. I don't think they mean close encounters of the third kind.
Yeah, the third kind is alien contact.
Yeah, I live very near Lake Michigan. Any particular interest happening in the eastern sky?
In the eastern sky? Well, it depends on. Well, right now, you can see Venus in the morning sky just before sunrise. It's very bright, very beautiful, and remember, Venus is the number one reported UFO. So people always mistake it for something other than it is, but it is just blazing Venus and Jupiter right now, and the evening sky is very bright in the east. So people can see that right after sunset. They see something crazy bright. That's going to be Jupiter.
I saw Jupiter very close to the moon, and it wasn't that long ago. It was
Christmas
magnificent.
It was Christmas night.
Is that
December 25th?
It was amazing to see the moon, and then you see Jupiter, bright as can be, right, just right next to it.
And that's going to happen again on the 21st, January 21st, Martin Luther King Day. That night, make sure you, if it's clear, get out, and the moon and Jupiter will be right next to each other, very close.
Wow, that how often does that happen?
It can happen like it's been doing almost every month as the moon makes its orbit, but sometimes they separate a little bit. But it happens a fair amount. I wouldn't say it's, you know, real rare, but they're always fun. It's always fun to look at and to know what it is.
I'm looking at a calendar of planetary things that are going to happen or things in our night sky in 2013. Mm-hmm. And it says here there will be a supermoon in June. What's a supermoon?
Yeah, that's got a lot of headlines lately. It's just the moon's orbit, it's not perfectly circular. It's elliptical, meaning it gets bigger sometimes and a little less bright sometimes. But it's nothing people really would notice unless they were alerted by this.
Well, it's not like some huge, gigantic moon or anything.
Exactly. So, I mean, yes, it's going to be a little brighter. I think it's 14% or something like that. And so, yeah, if you had a photometer and you measured things, you could actually figure that out. But I think to the casual person, they really wouldn't know the difference just looking up at it.
Let's go now
but to... But it's still fun to...
Yeah, yeah. Tom in Kimberly is with us. Hello, Tom.
Hi. I was wondering, what is the best type of telescope for a novice to buy? I know there's reflective, refractive. What's the best, easiest one to use?
Oh, good question, Tom. And we usually get it around this time of year with the holidays and gift-giving. But we recommend, remember, a pair of binoculars is like a 2-inch telescope. If they're ever adaptable or you can buy something that will connect them to a tripod, that's great. You can always go there. Otherwise, we recommend at least a 4 to 5 inch reflecting telescope, and those can be found for anywhere from $200 to $300 or so. We don't recommend buying anything under $100 for a telescope, just because the optics are not that good. And so, 4 to 5 inches will get you some spectacular views of the moon, and it will get you Saturn's rings and in the moons of Jupiter.
Okay, Tom.
All right, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And besides a telescope, we had Siobhan saying that she's a relatively new stargazer. Are there other things we might want to invest in if we want to get the most of our night sky experience?
Just making a point of it, planning for it. Take your family or yourself, friends, and just plan a night picnic for a change, right? We have these day picnics.
Mm-hmm.
Get out there and do a night picnic. And just celebrate, pick a night. You know it's going to be clear. Just load up the car and pack the picnic basket and just do it. Or visit a planetarium and find out more. That's another way to do it. I mean, we always have a clear night, so it's nice to look at the sky. But just make a point of it. That's a big thing to do.
I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Bob Bonneder. He is director of the Daniel M. Soroff Planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum. And we're talking about some of the things that we can expect in our 2013 night sky. Lots of things coming up. Some astronomers are calling 2013 the year of the comet because of two bright comets that are expected, one in March, the other in December, but lots of other things going on too. And we're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your experiences as a stargazer. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. If there is any space-related events or views that you have, you can bring those up too. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. Kathleen will be talking with the son of the slain president of the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin, who died almost 5 months ago in that shooting. She will be talking with the son about his work promoting peace and advocating for gun control. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. We are talking about space and the planets and our night sky. Talking with Bob Bonneder, who is the director of the planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum. And let's go back to the phones and go to our next caller. Earl in Medford is with us. Hello, Earl.
Hello, Bob and Joy. A great show. I'm concerned, though, about tightening budgets for NASA observatories, general research, and the choice between more robots like Voyager, Curiosity, Galileo, and then more manned missions or human-powered missions. It seems to me that the robotic ones are safer, more affordable, and so far have given us much more science. What do you think, Bob?
You touched on a great debate, Earl. Mm-hmm. A very good debate. It's been going on for a long time, as you well know, and it's going to always be a debate. And I guess I lean it on the side of balance. I think you need some of the manned missions. I think it really is inspiring for the next generation, for kids. They love to talk to astronauts. And I know what you're saying, that it's more economical and more efficient to do the robotic probes, but there's something about the astronauts that really inspire kids and adults. So it's I'm always torn because I know what you're saying, and so
balance. There we go. Well, we talked a little bit about the Mars rover, and what about this Juno mission to Jupiter? What's going to? This is in October.
Yeah, it's a polar orbiter. It's going to pass by the Earth in October, and it's not going to get to Jupiter until the summer of 2016. So it's taken a kind of a roundabout way to get there. It's flying by the Earth to get a gravity assist, and going back to what Earl was saying, that's more economical. It's more efficient to use less fuel and use the planets for gravity assist to get out there. So that's what Juno is doing. And it's a polar orbiter. It's going to look at Jupiter and hopefully some of the moons. One curious moon is Europa, which scientists believe there is an ocean beneath the ice on this moon of Jupiter. So we shall see.
And why is it important to know this?
It's important to know this because it's important to know us. I mean, when we study the planets, the geology, the meteorology, all of this, it helps better understand our world. It really does. The science that comes back, the technology to build the missions, you know, it's all spent here on Earth. So everything we find out about there better calibrates who we are, what our planet is doing. And so these are just some of the reasons. And beyond that, you always have the joy of discovery, the joy of the journey and exploring what is never, you know, has never been found out before.
And so it's a ways away, but in October, we will be able to see Juno. We can't see it fly by Earth.
We can't see it. No, we won't be able to see it. It's too small of a spacecraft. I mean, some people with sophisticated telescopes and can track its orbit might be able to pick it up. But to the average stargazer, no one is going to see it.
Okay. Next, we go to Bill in Kenosha. Hello, Bill.
Hi, Joy and Bob. Thanks for letting me on here. I'm an amateur astronomer, and I'd like to recommend to beginning amateurs to start out simple with a pair of binoculars, like 7x50s are very good, easy to hold, and big enough objective lens to gather enough light. And another thing is learn your constellations, and you can use a thing called a star frame. And I think if you Google it, you can find information on it. There's books out on it, and you take a wire coat hanger, bend it into a square, put on some plastic wrap on there, and then you can copy down the constellation and make it the proper size when held at arm's length to find it up in the sky.
Mm.
Very good. Very good recommendations, Bill. And we also recommend a star party. People often ask, I want to get a telescope right away, and Bill said learn the constellations, and it's true. We want people to learn the night sky before they invest any money into it, you know, find out if you like it. And if you're seriously thinking about a telescope, these star parties are put on by local astronomy clubs, and I imagine Bill's a member of one. And what you do is they just set up and their telescopes, they go to a dark site, and you're more than welcome. It doesn't cost anything. And then you can look at all these different telescopes and, you know, talk to the astronomers and find out how much they cost, what they spent on them, what you can see. And it's a great way to learn about the night sky. And we have a website on our planetarium page that links to different sky clubs in the Wisconsin area.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm sorry, Bill, did you have something else?
The Racine Astronomical Society holds usually weekly open viewing in the summer months when it's a clear sky. And be prepared for frustration as an amateur. You're gonna, and especially in Wisconsin, clouds are often cloud you out, and you have to be very patient to get some good viewing in this state.
Very good point. Yes, Bill.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Phil. I'm looking at a January Starry Nights 2013 map from your planetarium, Bob, and it has, I guess it's a bunch of different constellations and things that we can see in the sky, and even on, I don't know if you can just print off this chart and go outside and use it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You can just go to our planetarium webpage, and on the main page, I think you can just sign up for it. So, and we'll send it to you absolutely free by email, and it's a star map. You can take it outside, and we really geared the star map for kind of the city suburban sky, so it's not filled with, you know, all the stars that you see on most star maps. And it has, you know, the Great Square of Pegasus, Cassiopeia, the W, which right now is near the top of the sky, Big Dipper, Orion the Hunter, all these great constellations that you can see even in the amongst the city lights.
Very neat. Yeah. So those are the ones that we can see in January. And do they change on a monthly basis, or at least their positions? Do I suppose?
Oh, sure. Yeah. If folks out there can visualize the Earth going around the sun, and so the night side of the Earth always points in different directions as we go around the sun, so we see different constellations every month.
Let's go next to Rick in Portage County. Hello, Rick.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Just another recommendation I wanted to make was for many people have spotting scopes, maybe 15 to 40 power for viewing wildlife, and they're absolutely terrific on a tripod for viewing planets. You can see all of the moons from around Jupiter, the rings on Saturn. I show it to my friends, and they're going, I can't believe I can see that with your spotting scope. And, you know, so then you got a multi-purpose type thing, too, kind of like binoculars, but more powerful. They just wanted to recommend that because they really are terrific.
Excellent point, Rich. Yeah, they're great, too. And they're typically not that expensive, I mean, compared to some of the cheaper telescopes that people end up buying, which, of course, we recommend not to do.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Bob Bonnader. He is director of the planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum. We're welcoming your questions for him about all things night sky related. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Looking for your stargazing questions and experiences. Mark emails, on rare occasions in the evening and early morning during the winter, shafts of light can be seen in the distance shooting up from area lights and street lights. This is fantastic to see. It may not last long and is only seen in specific areas. What is this caused by?
I'm not sure, to be honest. Shafts of light, it sounds like he said it was caused from streetlights?
On rare occasions in the evening and early morning during the winter, shafts of light can be seen in the distance shooting up from area lights and streetlights. Yeah, I guess it's something.
It's a reflection off ice particles hanging in the air or something. The lights could do that. It wouldn't be anything astronomical.
Yeah.
There's a thing called zodiacal light that comes from the dust in our solar system, but you can only see that. It's a rare sight when you've got really dark skies.
Next, let's go to James in Green Bay. Hello, James.
Hi. I guess I'm calling. I'm just curious, for meteor showers, what's the best place in the United States to look for actual meteor rocks that may have landed on the Earth? I know that's a very a small percentage of those that you'd actually be able to find, but just, you know, I'm interested in trying that for a vacation sometime in the next couple of years.
Huh.
That's a good question, James. I'm not sure. Antarctica, I know, is one good place to go. Professional people go there to see it. And I know when we had that one over Wisconsin, people fled out like crazy. There was a meteor that came in and broke up. I think it was southwestern Wisconsin.
Okay.
Part of Illinois. So you almost have to track when there's a big meteor and it breaks up, and then people go and start looking for it. But beyond that, I'm really not sure. You want to go someplace where the ground doesn't change much, like a desert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Arizona, I'm guessing.
Yeah, exactly.
That fractured comet, was that from 2002?
That what? I'm sorry?
The fractured comet, was that from 2002?
No, it was just like a year ago, I think.
A year ago.
Well,
yeah, I don't remember the date exactly, I'm sorry, but there was a very bright meteor that broke up, and some of the meteorites fell to the Earth.
I do remember that. Maybe we can look it up just to share the information. A meteorite that broke up, and some people found parts of it in southwestern Wisconsin.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And we can see if we can look that up. Thank you very much, James. Kumar in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to mention about the cool app from Google. It's called like Google Sky. You can look at live maps, so you can download that free from Google.
Yeah, that's
A Google Sky app. Is that right,
yeah,
Bob?
Yeah, Google Sky. It's just like a star map, but you could like travel through the universe 3D in it. It's kind of like Google Earth, if people have played with that before. It's real cool. It's a great app. You don't. So yes, it's very nice.
All right, so we talked about a lot of things that are happening in the night sky in 2013. Did we miss anything? I just want to make sure we the big things are the comets, what else, though? Is there anything we missed?
Yeah, just keep an eye on the comets. Again, they're very unpredictable. People are going to hear a lot about them as we get closer. So I would say read the fine print a little bit because they're never guaranteed. Comet Kohoutek in 76, I mean, it was supposed to be the best comet ever, and everyone was just geared up for it, and it turned out to be just a dud. So, and then comets got a bad reputation. So, I mean, that's why I'm hoping they're bright and beautiful, but just beware. They're unpredictable. Besides that, just keep track of the planets. There's some eclipses around the world if people are willing to travel, but unfortunately, there's none here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, so if we're in Europe or something, we can see them, huh?
Yeah, there's one for the eastern United States. There's an eclipse that's visible on November 3rd if people live out in the East Coast, or no people.
You know, something that caught my eye on your Starry Messenger newsletter that came out for January of 2013 was about our orbit around the sun and how many miles we're logging. It asked if we feel tired after another long year. I mean, talk just a little bit about that if you remember that offhand in terms of how many miles we travel around the sun each year.
It's 600 million miles, Joy, and I think my family and friends get a little sick of me sometimes because I always write their mileage a lot on the birthday cards and stuff when they get them in the mail. So I'm a little predictable in that fashion. But
that's hilarious. So you times you multiply your age by the 600 million.
Yeah,
and that's how many
you get your total distance. And so anyway, it's just a fun fact. It really, I mean, it's nothing we experience or anything, but it's just it is if you think about, you know, the Earth moves, right? And our teachers tell us that, our parents tell us that, I'm telling people that right now, but it's just a weird concept to think that we're moving almost 20 miles a second in our orbit, and then we spin with the Earth's rotation almost 1,000 miles an hour, and we don't feel it, sense it, and the fact that we discovered that is, to me, just absolutely mind-boggling.
Yeah. Let's. By the way, Bill Martin's found out that yes, a meteorite or parts of it anyway were found in April of 2010 in Iowa County. Pieces of it were found in Iowa County. One expert mentioned that they found a piece that was like a kilogram of total weight, and the expert called that ridiculous. I'm not quite sure why. Is that heavy or light?
1 kilogram?
Yeah.
It's fairly light,
yeah.
But it's still significant. I mean, it's still cool that they found that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Marv emails, I was in Key West a few years ago and witnessed a strange sunset while in Florida Bay. As the sun was setting, there appeared to be a segmented ring of colored beads swirling around the top of the sun. I was told that these were called Bailey's beads. Do you, Bob, know anything about these and what this was all about?
Sure. Bailey's beads are not associated with a sunset. They're associated with a total eclipse of the sun.
Oh.
They are the last shafts of sunlight that come through as the moon is about to eclipse the sun. And the reason you have Bailey's beads is because the moon is not perfectly round, right? It has mountains and things. So as it covers the sun, little shafts of sunlight get through the valleys, if you will, between the mountain peaks. And that's what is Bailey's beads.
All right. Well, we have just a minute to go. Tonight and tomorrow night, if we're away from the city lights and it's clear, we can see some meteors.
Yes, yes. The Quadranton meteor shower will take place tomorrow morning. And if people are out and about, check it out. Otherwise, just enjoy lovely Jupiter and the evening sky, Venus in the morning sky. Saturn's also in the morning sky, shining in the south. And just check out this wondrous universe in which we live.
Will do. Thank you so much for being with us.
No problem. Thank you, Joy.
Bob Bonader is director of the Daniel M. Soriff Planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum. And we have the planetarium's website, linked to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Thanks to Amanda Magnus for producing and on-air producing this show. Thanks to Bill Martins for on-air direction. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Now I understand what you tried to say to me, and how you suffered for